Blog Talk Radio.
The Madden Voice, we are back, season 5, episode 17. 1 week left to the regular season, and the playoffs begin. And, you know, there really isn't a lot of drama left in the playoffs. It's really more about seeding in the AFC. It's really about seeding. There's that last playoff spot looks like it's kind of up for grabs, and we're going to talk about that. And in the NFC, it's really down to one game and also some seeding. So, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to go through it all. The Madden Voice is here for you tonight. If you've been watching ESPN, if you've been watching Fox Sports, if you've been watching NFL Network and you are confused, we got it all for you tonight. We're going to go through all the scenarios, and then we're going to talk about who we think is going to get in and why. And we're also going to talk about some storylines too, kind of looking at the end of the year and looking into the future. And I picked some teams that have some kind of precarious futures, and we're going to talk about that as well. And but before I do that, something I did not do last week is I didn't wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. So Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Three Kings Day, although Three Kings Day is another week or so away, so I'm a little early on that one. But whatever you celebrate, I hope your Christmas and your holidays are good. If you're on vacation this week, I hope you're enjoying your time off. And if you're working this week, well, that's too bad. And I also have another Merry Christmas from someone very special to us. Well, actually, you know what? Let me introduce my co-host first, and then I'll get the other Merry Christmas out of the way. First, we have EAFL Season 1 Super Bowl winner, as well as the commissioner of the EAFL Fantasy Football League. He is known to us as Train. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
Thank you, T. What's up, man?
Not much,
bro.
Not much. Happy holidays, brother. We also have Madden Nation Season 4 contestant. That's right, Madden Nation. That means he was on TV playing a video game. Y'all wish you could be on TV playing a video game. I know you do. He was also the runner-up last year's EAVG Madden Challenge for $25,000. One of the best Madden players in the world, and also a pretty knowledgeable guy about football. I never knew that until he actually called into the show. So it's good to have him with us, and he is known as K-Star. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
Glad to be here, man. How you guys
good.
Doing?
Doing good. Doing good.
Doing good. Happy holidays, man. Good.
So, you know, I got a phone call from someone pretty important that wanted to say thank you to us and to the listeners, and so I asked if I could record it and play it, and he said, sure, go ahead, you know, it's fine, you know, he said, you and I would like that, you know, we're cool like that, so I'll let you go ahead and record it, you know, so here's a special Merry Christmas for everybody.
We'd like to take a moment to thank you and your family for the warmth and friendship that you've shown ours, for sharing your hospitality and your stories.
In this holiday season, we're reminded that the things that unite us as a people are more powerful and enduring than anything that sets us apart, and we all have a stake in each other, in something larger than ourselves. So from our family to yours, I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays.
All right. Thank you, Mr. President. We appreciate that, man. You know, took time out, had his wife on there, his kids. I mean, that was pretty nice of him. Don't you guys think that was pretty nice of him? Give us our own special Madden Voice message. You know what I'm saying? Gotcha, man.
Nice.
That's good stuff, man. So, all right. So, you know, a lot going on NFL. A lot of things we got to talk about. You know, and one of the things we are definitely going to talk about today.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
But Jim, I'm sorry. We have to talk about the playoffs because they're only a week away. I mean, we have to, bro. I'm sorry. We're going to talk about them.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
I'm sorry. Jim's not happy that we're going to talk about playoffs, but maybe because the Colts aren't in. But we're going to talk about the playoffs. So before we get to playoffs, a couple of storylines. I don't know if you saw the game last night. And Drew Brees set the single season record for most passing yards. And that record is 27 years old, set by one Dan Marino. And, you know, a couple of things. I was reading some press on that today. And people, you know, especially some of the people on the Falcons were a little upset that, you know, the Saints being up 22 points late in the fourth quarter, and Brees clearly made the conscious decision to go ahead and say, you know what, I'm going to knock this out. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to just take care of this now. I don't know. Train, what do you think? Do you think that that was – is there a problem with that? Is that poor sportsmanship? Is that putting your own self in front of the team? Is that, you know, disrespecting the other team? What is your thoughts on Brees with such a large lead late in the game going for the record?
It's a record, man, to be broken. That's a part of playing the game. I mean, players do set personal goals to break records, especially when you're that close. So I don't see a problem with it. If you don't want him to break the record, then stop him. He's a division rival. Then stop him. And what's so hard about that? You got a defense, don't you? They might see him again because they're going to the playoffs. Then stop him. Come on, man. Stop crying over Field Mill. Don't do it to his Breeze. Man, whatever, man. These players, man up. Stop him if you don't want him to break the record. Else, take it like he's been doing it all season long.
K-Star, you agree with Train?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, at the end of the day, you got to stop him, especially since it was pretty – they pretty much made a conscious effort for a while to, you know, break the record even the game out of reach. So, I mean, it's not like they were blindsided by it. So there's really no excuse for whining and crying over it. They're just mad that, you know, they were getting dropped. And you know what? He wanted to do it on national television, on the Monday Night Football game, in front of his home crowd, and I see nothing wrong with it at all. So, yeah, especially a division rival. Like, shut up. Like, it's a division rival for guys. Like, what do you expect? You expect to, like, be, like, nice? You expect them to take knees? Like, what is this? What are we doing here?
You know, I'm in an unusual position to agree with you both completely, 100% agree with you both. You know, I mean, you know, bottom line is you're on the field too. There is no written rule that says when you get up by a certain number of points, you have to slack off. Now, there is sportsmanship, but considering the fact that it was a nationally televised audience, considering the fact that they were at home, and I know they're home next week, but, I mean, it's Carolina, 1 o'clock game versus Monday Night Football, considering he was only 30 yards away at the time when he made the decision to go ahead and try to get it, and to me, as soon as you saw him in shotgun, that means you knew he was going for it, so now stop him, you know? And if you can't stop them, which you couldn't stop them pretty much all game, I mean, to me, your problem is your defense, which was supposed to be a pretty good defense, looked like crap. I mean, to me, that's what y'all need to be worried about is what the hell happened to your defense, because you played them a lot better the first time, but he just picked y'all apart like y'all wasn't even there. So stop whining. Take it, you know. I mean, hey, if I was a Falcons fan, I probably would feel the same way, but I would be wrong, you know, because, I mean, that's hey, you know, congratulations, Drew Brees. I think it's a great, great victory. And, you know, the thing about it is, to add one more thing, everybody knows who Drew Brees is. That is not his style, okay? He doesn't have a history. This isn't the Patriots, okay? This isn't Belichick saying, you know, we're going to play 60 minutes. This is a guy who's one of the classiest guys in the NFL, okay? So come on now. I mean, give it a rest. What do you guys – I'm sorry?
No, I was just going to add on. I just think it's silly for players to have an issue when you know a guy is coming into that game very close to breaking a record. You know he's going to shoot for it. You know what I'm saying? And it's silly to sit there and have an issue with it because you're losing. By 22, you're losing because you suck. It's
right.
Sad that they're going to the playoffs, but they're going to get blowed out again.
Oh, they looked horrible. They really did. You know, and to be honest with you, Atlanta hasn't really impressed me much this year, but I thought maybe they were on an upswing, but, you know, I think I remember saying if Dallas gets in, I want Detroit because I want a rematch. I'm rethinking that. The way them Falcons look, bring on the Falcons, man, because, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
seriously. Oh,
hey,
absolutely.
Yeah, the Falcons can thank Johnny Knox for going to the playoffs since he slipped on that pass. They end up Falcon Cup and get injured.
Mm.
Told no story. I digress.
Yeah. But the hell was I going to say? Yeah, and I think Drew Brees did make one mistake, though. On his press conference when he said he wanted to finish the game off on a positive note and he wanted a good drive, I mean, okay, Drew, I appreciate what you're saying, but let's be honest. You were already up 3 touchdowns. That was not why you did it. You did it to get the record. You know, all I hear is, you know, oh, well, you know, we had stumbled on a few drives. And I mean, okay, I know you're a perfectionist. But let's be honest. You wanted the record. And I don't blame you. I don't think any reasonable-minded person blames you. Go ahead and get that record, bro. Whose record do you think is more impressive? Let me start with K-Star. Now, the problem is I don't know how old you guys were when the first record was set. I have the unfortunate age of actually remembering when that record was set. But who's K-Star? Who do you think, Breeze or Marino?
I got to go with Marino for a couple of reasons. One, the era, you know, was more defensive oriented. It was his second year in the league. He took his team to Super Bowl that year. But as far as the actual season itself went, I got to go with Marino because, he actually had less pass attempts at this point of the season. So even though Drew Brees has another game to go, he already has surpassed Dave Marino in pass attempts. You know, the Dolphins went on to go to the Super Bowl, and I believe that's the same year they defeated the Bears from going undefeated. Is that right?
No, that wasn't the same year.
A different year?
It was the year before.
Year before? Okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, you know, he had less pass attempts. It was a much harder era to pass the ball. Those kind of numbers back then were just mind-boggling. No one – it was ready for a 4,000-yard passer, beat another one, a 5,000-yard passer. I mean, what is that? Again, second year in the league. It's not like he had a familiar rapport with all his players and coaching staff like Brees has, which don't get me wrong. Brees, this is a special. This is a special player. Easy first-all Hall of Famer Drew Brees is, but I got to go with Dave Marino. And that magical season that he had is being a little bit better. Again, less pass attempts. He took his team to Super Bowl that, you know, has yet to be said for the Saints, you know, this year. That could have definitely happened, and probably, you know, it could. So we'll see how it plays out. But to this point, I got to go with Dave Marino.
Trey?
I don't necessarily remember Dan Marino's record. I wasn't into NFL back then. I was a toddler. But I still have to go with Marino's record simply because of the era. I mean, passing the ball like that wasn't heard of back then. You know, you put up gaudy passing on us back then, it was like, whoa, be afraid. I mean, now almost every single play run is a pass for some teams. Some teams are passing. Almost 70% of the offense is passing the ball. So I would definitely have to go with Marino.
You know, I gave this question some really deep thought. I heard all the arguing, you know, back and forth. And, you know, I got to tell you, I don't agree. You know, I think Marino's record it was incredible. It lasted 27 years, so, I mean, it was incredible. But here's what I think one of the differences is. When we look at this era of NFL quarterbacks, probably the first quarterback that comes to mind is Tom Brady. Maybe the second that comes to mind is Peyton Manning. Drew Brees in this era might be the third to come to mind, okay? Since Marino set the record, we've had some fairly prolific passers come into the NFL. We've had Joe Montana. We've had Troy Aikman. We've had Steve Young. You know, we've had some very, you know, Hall of Fame QBs come through and finish off their careers. Drew Brees, to me, is very underappreciated for what he does out on the field. Yes, he's a Super Bowl champion, but he's always, to me, in the shadow of those other two quarterbacks. And this year, you got to throw Aaron Rodgers in as he's in the shadow. Everyone's saying, you know, MVP, MVP. Well, you know, when you look at Aaron Rodgers, you know. So he's always seems to be just that next guy. So for him to have done it, and yeah, he's got more pass attempts, but still to have done it in 15 games, and I understand there's scheming involved in that, but even though the defenses are, the rules have restricted the defenses to some degree, the defenses are much more sophisticated today than they were 30 years ago. So there is that side of it too. So I think they're both very impressive, but I really don't like when I hear things like there should be an asterisk next to it, as was implied, because of the era and because of the rules being different and that kind of stuff. I think he's earned a record. He deserves every ounce of accolade that you can give someone to set that record in 15 games. With one of, you know, it's very possible this guy could go over 5,500 yards. Which is just insane. I don't care. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things that you just, I don't care what era you're talking about. The thing about someone passing for that many yards is just incredible. So
One thing I wanted to share real quick looking at it. Dave Marino, to this point, you know, he has a game, of course, Drew Brees still has a game left, had 7 more touchdowns than Drew Brees on the year. He had a higher touchdown percentage and interception percentage. But a slightly higher interception percentage, so really just splitting numbers here. Either way, yeah, Drew Brees is a masterful quarterback. It's kind of a shame. I do agree he's kind of like in the shadow a little bit of the Brady and Manning. Not even so much Rodgers, because, you know, Rodgers, you know, he's kind of more or less new to being great. But, yeah, he's been in the shadow for a while. So I'm really happy for him, because that's a humble guy. He went to Purdue, which is about 45 minutes away from here. And he was great in college. I don't know if you guys saw him. And the knock on him going to NFL was always too short. And his accuracy, his foot movement in the pocket is just phenomenal. I don't know if you guys saw, but last night he was just, it looked like he was in the Matrix back in the pocket. He was just dodging back and forth, like bullets flying, and it was just insane. The man's just a special player, so he definitely deserves all the credit in the world.
I agree completely. And I when I said shadow, meaning only this year with Rodgers, because he's had such a phenomenal year, but I think we've talked about this before. Those three guys, they're separated by very fine lines. But I'll tell you right now, man, I don't know. I don't know if I could put money against Drew Brees right now after, you know, I've watched a couple of his games, partly also because he's my fantasy quarterback. But it's just watching him back there. I always thought, to me, the most impressive quarterback I've ever seen the most impressive quarterback I've ever seen is Joe Montana. Joe Montana, to me, is there will never be another Joe Montana for all around everything that guy could do. But second to Joe Montana, to me, was Peyton Manning. As far as preparation, professionalism, you know, wasn't the most mobile quarterback in the world, but didn't have to be, you know. And I tell you, man, Drew Brees is certainly pushing that envelope in my mind. And, you know, then, of course, Tom Brady's in that discussion, too. But Drew Brees, man, I'll tell you, that guy, he's something. If you didn't walk away impressed last night, then I don't know what the heck game you were watching, because it was incredible.
The real test, though, with Drew Brees is how long is his record going to stand? Because, you know, Dan Marino's lasted for 27 years, so I think that might be telling itself which was more impressive of a feat. So,
To some degree, but you know, I've said this before, is I don't know of an era where we've had this many prolific passers at the same time, you know,
yeah,
to have, you know, these three guys. And then there's other, I mean, you know, there's guys, these other guys are throwing for 4,000 yards like nothing, you know, the Rivers and Romo and some of these guys, Ben, and some of these guys are throwing for 4,000 yards like nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we have a lot more prolific passers today than we did back in the 80s. But I do agree to a point. It will be interesting to see with Brady looking like he might break the record too, and Rodgers not being far off the pace. It will be interesting to see how long this record holds. All right, so let's. I heard, you know, when Train was talking earlier, man, I heard something in your voice, man, and I think we need to give you the floor, man, because I feel frustration, man. I feel it from you, bro. Okay? I want to give you the floor, man. The Bears, you know, man, almost cost me the money, bro. We're going to get into that shortly. But, you know, these guys gave up 5 touchdown passes, man, to Aaron Rodgers. And he didn't even play the whole game, you know? I mean, talk to me about your Bears. Is it as simple as, you know, and really, don't even talk to me. Don't even talk to K-Star. Okay, talk to Bears Nation out there, and give them some hope. Is it as simple as Cutler and Forte will be back, all will be well, or are we looking at maybe it's time Lovey to go, maybe Martz? I mean, talk to us about your Bears.
It's not as simple as Cutler and Forte coming back. I mean, trust that is a huge fall off, but even still. offensive line and the wide receiving core still need to be upgraded. Lovie Smith's defense is designed such that the front four can get pressure alone, and that hasn't been a consistent thing all year. And that's pretty much been the thing that hurts us when we go up against offenses like Green Bay's and the Saints offense, and even if we ever end up meeting with the Patriots. I mean, if our defense front four don't generate pressure, everybody else gets toasted. So that was the case. That was definitely the case in the game on Christmas Day. But they got some upgrading to do. I don't necessarily think Lovie Smith needs to lose his job. I'm 50-50 on Mike March, because on one end, I want Jay Cutler to be in the offense for at least to stay in the same offense for, you know, more than 2 years. See, he's been constantly changing the offenses since he's been in the league, and has never been able to claim one offense of his own. If you look at all the other quarterbacks that are successful, barring there's a few exceptions, but, I mean, the ones that are putting up the numbers, man, they own their offenses. They've been in their offenses 3+ years, and they know where everybody is supposed to be. They know where all the receivers are supposed to be. They don't have to worry about that when they come to the line. So I'm kind of 50-50 on Mike Marsh. I kind of want him to stay just for the sake of continuity, but at the same time, this guy is arrogant, man, and it don't seem like he does what Lovie Smith wants to see on the offensive side of the ball. So, for going into next season, it's great to get a healthy Cutler, a healthy Forte. There's a few contract situations for Forte. Hopefully they get that wrapped up. But they need to get Cutler a wide receiver, somebody that he can throw to irregardless of whether that man is covered or not. You know what I'm saying? Everybody seems like everybody in the league has one except for us. They need to upgrade the O-line. I mean, it's obvious that when Cutler stays upright, and he doesn't need 7 seconds. He can take a good five. Just a good 5 seconds. He's all good. A good three. Because he'll scramble for the rest of them. He'll keep a play alive. So they need to upgrade the offensive line so that we can consistently move the ball, whether it be on the ground or in the air, and keep Cutler upright. And as far as the defense, they got to find a D-tackle. The end would be nice, but we already got Peppers. I would love for us to have a D-tackle that can constantly generate pressure, kind of like a Dominique Sue without the craziness. So other than that, man, our defense is, you know, our defense is getting old, and our window of opportunity with that defense, with Erlacher, Briggs, and Tillman, and even Peppers, man, it's closing. So if it doesn't happen within the next 2 years, man, it's always going to be starting all over again.
Well, I think that's very helpful. I think Bears Nation should be encouraged, I would just briefly say about the Bears, to me it's pretty clear, okay? To me it is pretty clear. I got to tell you, I'm probably done at this point giving Jay Cutler a hard time, because I think what I saw really impressed me about Jay Cutler's role on the Chicago Bears. And I think it's kind of fallen under the radar just a little bit. You know, they talk about it with the Colts and no Peyton Manning. And then we see a very similar effect in Chicago without Jay Cutler and Matt Forte. But I really think it was because Marion Barber was carrying the load fairly well. He had a couple mistakes, and I get it. But he was running as well as I've seen him run, okay? I really think that, you know, it was the opposite of the Tebow effect in Denver. Tebow brought that team to a whole new level. And I think when you guys lost Cutler, I really think had Jay Cutler not hurt his thumb, and it's funny that he breaks his thumb on a hustle play. You know, it wasn't like Romo hitting his hand on the guy's helmet making a pass. Ooh. It was trying to stop a guy going down the sideline scoring a touchdown. You know, and how many quarterbacks do you see that pull up, that won't try to make that tackle? And so I have a new level of respect for Jay Cutler, and I really think he comes back healthy. and he has the same attitude he clearly had and as a leader, and you guys keep that team intact and maybe make some of the minor changes you suggested, I think next year, man, look out. Just like I said this year, you guys scared me this year. And I think next year, look out for them Bears. I'm telling you, you guys, you're that close. I really firmly believe that. I said it this year. You guys were 7-3. I was right. And then, you know, injury, you know. But I think you guys have a lot to look forward to as long as no one overreacts to this year and they don't start making wholesale changes.
I don't, you know, honestly, I don't think they should. I'm sorry to cut you off. I really don't think they should actually get rid of Martz because that offense with color in the game, they were clicking. That was the best Bears team I've seen in a long time. They were clicking, so I don't think it's time to get rid of Martz. I think it's time to maybe get another offensive consultant just in case of this were to happen, or maybe a better backup plan because, listen, I mean, again, that offense was putting 30s on the board. It got hot. It was looking very, very dangerous up until, you know, when Cutler broke his thumb. So I wouldn't get rid of Martz at all. And if on the draft, I would definitely focus on offensive line, but I also would definitely get some help in that secondary because the plays I see you guys gave up, that double move, that safety put on Major Wright,
oh
terrible,
God.
Awful in coverage. Oh, my God. And Zach Bowman got absolutely toasted all night. And you got to get some help there. But it was bad. It kept going right at Zach Bowman. Play and play again. It was rough.
Yeah, you're right about the secondary. And then I did forget to mention them. You know, the Bears don't really necessarily look for what they quote-unquote call shutdown corners because of their defensive style. They look for corners who can they have decent coverage skills, but most importantly, that they can tackle. Their safeties are a big part of their defense.
They need to get safety. That's what I'm saying. If they get some athletic safeties that can play to cover two deep hashes, they'll be fine. But just seeing Major Wright get absolutely just destroyed on that double move by Jordy Nelson was just embarrassing. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that was bad.
It was just horrible how bad he got beat.
Fourth round draft pick, too. Four. Now, one thing that I think this guy has had long enough to try to bring talent to this team, and he does it via free agency, but it's kind of easy to do it via free agency when you've seen a guy already be productive. You can kind of gauge whether he'll fit in your system. But Jerry Angelo has done a horrible job with the draft. So if he decided to retire, man, I would not shed a tear. I wouldn't mind seeing Tim Ruskell take his place and kind of bring in some younger talent. Because right now, we don't have any depth. We started, if we lose veterans, it's a wrap, as you can see for this season. lose any veterans in spots, it's a wrap, man. You know, so we need somebody, because Jerry Angelo is big when it comes to the draft. He's always in the war room. He got his hand in everything, but he has done a horrible job bringing in talent for Chicago. I can't even name 10 draft picks that we have now since he's been GM since 2003. Since his first pick was Rex Grossman. Need I say more?
Okay. Well, Bears Nation, you heard it from the number one Bears fan in the world. And his partners, we all feel optimistic about the Bears' future. And I'm not just saying that to make you feel good. I sincerely think that next year is not really a consolation prize because, you know, everybody wants to win now. But I think you guys come back healthy. Man, you guys are going to be something to be reckoned with. Talk about a few other teams. The Bucks started out 4-2. They've lost, I don't even know how many straight, 8, 9, 10. 11. I don't know how many straight they've lost. They're 4-10, I want to say, or 4-11. Let me look real quick. But they are 4-11. They started out 4-2, so they've lost 9 in a row. Raheem Morris said that he's not concerned about his job. He doesn't think that you go from coach of the year to being the worst coach in the league. What do you guys think? Let me start with my NFC guru over there. You're the general manager, and I don't know who their general manager is, but do you fire Morris, or do you give him another year to see what he can do?
I think you give him another year. I think it's fair, pretty fair, to give any coach 3 years to get it together. Now, the only iffy part about doing that is that, you know, you normally like to see progression in them 3 years. And, you know, they digressed pretty badly this year compared to last year. I mean, pretty badly. Now, it wasn't just about them losing games. It was just how they were losing games. And I didn't know of them suffering any major injuries to cause them to lose the games that they were losing and the way they were losing games. I mean, they were getting ran over. Their defense was almost non-existent. Heck, I was even surprised, but we beat them. You know, I figured they was going to be pretty tough when we played them in London, but, man, they became pushovers after that. And, you know, I like Raheem Morris, you know what I'm saying? I like his enthusiasm as a coach, but I don't know what they need to do with via free agency. I think they have one of the youngest teams in the league.
Yes.
Yeah, and you need to get some glue, which is some veteran presence, to get the young guys to understand, you know, the importance of playing this game. You know, understand why you play this game. Because they seem to have lost any momentum that they had the year before. But I think you give him his third year. But at the same time, you know, along with him and whoever the GM is, you get some veteran presence in there, man, so that team can be competitive again.
I will just say this. I like him as a coach. My concern is I think he's lost the team. My concern is it appears the team has just given up. And if that is the case, then he's got to go. Because you don't get them back. Once you lose a pro team like that, they're gone. And I've never in pro sports heard of a time where you've seen a team quit like that and then the coach was able to resurrect them. I've never seen that. And I've watched this team. We played them a couple weeks ago. And even, you know, it was an NFL Network Saturday night game, I believe. And even Dion and these guys were saying, I'm looking at this team and they've quit. And when you look at their games and the outcomes, they're losing, but it doesn't even appear that they're being competitive. I know they've had some injuries and stuff, but, you know, you look at the Colts on the other hand, and they're fighting still, and they even got a couple of wins, you know, against, you know, playoff team, you know. So when I compare the two, and I say, well, damn, Caldwell, who is on the chopping block, at least his team is still fighting for him, you know. I don't see this team fighting. So if I'm the general manager, that's what I'm looking at. If the team is responding to the coach, I'd give him another year. I agree with you. 3 years is reasonable. But if the team has quit on him, then he's got to go. I don't know. K-Star, what do you think?
I kind of agree. I mean, I don't know. Raheem Morris is weird because they've regressed so much. Not a little bit, a whole lot of it. That team looks like flat out the worst team in the league, despite their record. And that's just, it's awful. The quarterback play has been horrible from Josh Freeman. You know, the defense has been very, very bad. This is a completely undisciplined football team. And the one thing I've noticed, mainly because I had LeGarrette Blount in one of my leagues, is if they get down at all, they completely scrap the run game and just go shotgun this, shotgun that, and try to sling it like Josh Freeman's a great quarterback. He's not. He's a young quarterback. Let's be real. Let's not get away from the run game. Let's not get away from your best offensive threat. They have a lot of problems. They really need some receivers. Mike Williams, you know, he's okay. But, you know, Freeman needs a lot more help than what he's got. I say give Raheem Morris one more year, but you have to be extremely, extremely discouraged if you're the GM of the Bucs seeing the regression of this football team, because there are some good football players, and it's almost like they're not listening to them. And that's a very big problem. Again, I feel like they should keep him, but look, if week 17, if they lay down another just complete horrible mess of a game, you know what? You might have to get rid of him, because, again, like you pointed out, at least the Colts are fine for Caldwell. At least other teams are still fighting. The Vikings just pulled off a win, fighting for Leslie Frazier. You saw the Dolphins play hard for Tony Soprano before he was canned. This guy, not so much. So, again, we'll see how Week 17 plays out. I know it sounds silly to base it all in one game, but you have to see some kind of improvement at some point. And hopefully they finish strong for him, because if they don't, that might cost him his job.
You know, K-Star, I think you make a great point. And this is, like, pathetic because I'm agreeing with you guys. I mean, we need to find something we can disagree about. But I think you make a great point. I think that I would look at that last game, because we have examples around the NFL of teams. Look at the Eagles. Teams that know that their coach is on the chopping block, and they are responding because they like their coach. They respect their coach. They don't think it's their coach's fault. They want the coach to come back next year. And that, to me, speaks volumes. Because you're not going to change 53 players. You know, so you may make some changes on the roster, but the bulk of those players are going to be back next year. And if they're responding to that coach, then to me, if I'm the owner or general manager, I'm going to say, well, you know, I have to take this into consideration. They're not going to necessarily make the final decision, but we got to take that into consideration. And so I would look at that last game and I'd say, okay, you know, let's see how these guys respond. And if we get the same stuff we've seen the last few weeks, I'm sorry. He's a nice guy. Good father, you know, great husband, but he's not going to be our coach. You got to go. On the same note, let me stick with you, K-Star. We brought up the Colts. What about Jim Caldwell? And you're out there in the middle of Colts land, let me remind the listeners. Yeah. So what do you think, and what's your take on Caldwell?
The sense out here is, you know, people obviously want him to go pretty much all year. Like, you know, how do you not, you know, generate any wins? And now... After, of course, you get a little win streak, two games, people are less, you know, to put him on the firing block. So the way they're playing, I feel like you have to give him another chance because, I mean, yeah, they're going to go either 2-14 or 3-13, but the fact of the matter is they lost a four-time league MVP. And if anything, you know what, it's not Jim Caldwell's fault that the front office built a team that has a fatal flaw. And that fatal flaw is if Peyton Manning goes down, so does that team.
Hold on, pause. Say that one more time, what you just said. You said it's not Jim. No, I want to hear it again. It's not Jim Caldwell's fault.
Yeah, it's not Jim Caldwell's fault. It's more of a front office issue because the fatal flaw, you know, was building a team solely around Peyton Manning's strengths and nothing else. And, you know, when he went down, the whole team did. That pass rush, again, they have Freeman Mathis for a reason. When they get that lead, you know, they go after the quarterback. They fly around to the football. You know, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, those are timing. Like, those aren't really athletic guys. Those are guys who are very great route runners, you know. And again, it's a timing-based offense. And when you get rid of him, you know, Peyton Manning, it's just, again, they just completely
can
drop the ball.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
That's the best point you've made on this topic. That is the point of the topic right there, that Caldwell should not lose his job based on what the front office, the owner and general manager, has built.
Yeah.
They built that team around Peyton Manning. Okay, maybe Tony Dungy had something to do with that as well. But that team was built. And I'm not even saying that that's the wrong, that was a mistake. Clearly, by the results of the Colts year after year, 10 wins every season, you know, Peyton Manning, MVP, a Super Bowl champion, championship. So clearly, I'm not even saying that that was the wrong thing to do. But now you see what happens when you do that and then you lose that guy. The coach should not be fired. He's a good coach. He knows what he's doing, and I think they need to sit back now and take and learn this lesson and say, okay, we learned a valuable lesson. Now how do we adjust? What do we do now? We are optimistic that we are going to have 100% Peyton Manning next year, so now what do we do in case we don't? Or in case he comes back and we find out he needs to, you know, he's injured again, or what do we do now? And that's, I think, should be the focus and not, well, you know, the Patriots went 11-5 without Brady, but look what you did. Well, that was completely
double organizational base, exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. I agree 100%. And this is really, like, I'm not happy because we keep agreeing. But Train, how do you see it?
Sorry, we all agreeing again. But I agree with pretty much everything you guys said, man. I'm sorry, but I don't think that man should lose his job. I really don't. And, you know, the front office is the one that built that team. As you know, they promote with their coaching, even with their head coaching. They promote once they got rid of Tony Dungy. Caldwell came from inside. You know, they didn't go outside to get a head coach. So they promoted, you know, from inside. So their organization is built from inside. And, you know, he wasn't the one that had, you know, the last say-so as far as the draft and all this. Let's get ready to find us another quarterback or someone that can at least help the team hold water if Peyton Manning goes down. So, yeah, definitely. I don't think he should lose his job. And plus, just based on what you guys previously mentioned with Raheem Morris, that, you know, it looks like he's lost the team. Caldwell has not lost his team. those coaches fought all year long to get a win. I don't care how ugly the Vegas numbers look as far as how much they would lose by. They fought all year long to get a win. And they got two of them against division opponents at that. So,
yeah,
I definitely think that man should keep his job.
If anything, actually, Bill Polian should be more under fire, I believe, than Jim Caldwell, because if you look at it, his recent draft pick's been pretty well off, for one. But, again, you know, they built a team around Peyton Manning. When he went out, you know, the whole game plan basically just completely off the board. They built the defense around Peyton Manning, the offense, everything. You know,
right.
And they had no backup quarterback. Like, what do you do in that situation? And, again, he didn't lose the team. They could have, especially after that same 64-point burger where they put on the Colts. They could have easily lost it. They could have easily just, you know, said, hey, we're done. Let's get blown out every game, whatever. But, no, they fought. They fought tooth and nail, and they really cared. And when they got that win, you know, against Houston last week, that team was very excited. You should have seen it. They were just going crazy on the sideline. There was no give up in that team, and that's pretty impressive.
You know, and on the note of their two wins and this ridiculous notion of blowing the last game so they could secure the number one spot in the draft.
That ain't happening.
I know, you know, and this is what really annoys me about the sports announcers and the critics and the pundits out there that do what we do, but on a professional level, so to speak. They actually get paid to do it. They sometimes are just stupid. You know, I mean, and I was watching Skip Bayless, who I was compared to last week, make the argument that they should do it. And Eric Mangini, who I'll tell you, I've just grown to completely enjoy and respect. The guy will be a coach next year somewhere. There's no doubt in my mind. If anyone has watched him on First Take, the guy's he's very intelligent. He's very thoughtful, but he knows what he's talking about. He doesn't make stupid points. He makes very good points. And he said it was very simply, how do you sell that to your players? How do you sell that to your organization? How do you sell that to your fans? We're going to tank a game because we want Andrew Luck. Are you kidding me? You don't make plans for April in December. You're playing a game. You play to win. You know what I'm saying? Wait for it.
Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out.
Love that guy. All right, we got a caller. And it is another 615 area code. Welcome to the Madden Voice.
You know who it is.
It must be.
You know who it is. Man, I just tuned in, man, and I'm loving the topic, man. Very good topic. I agree with everything you guys said, but I want to run this by you, especially as T just talked about Coach Mangini. Now, if you got somebody like that could coach the Colts next year, would it be worth firing the head coach right now and getting somebody maybe somebody who's won a championship, maybe Bill Cowher or John Gruden? Wouldn't it be nice to get somebody in there? They could be put in a very good position, especially if they get the number one pick.
I'm gonna let K-Star, since you're right there in Indianapolis, what do you think?
No, because the thing is, the only time you can ever talk to any of those guys is after you let go of your coach. So in this case, otherwise it's tampering. So in this case, it would have to fire Caldwell in a hopes of landing a better prospect. So they would have to hope that Cowher would come to, or, you know, would even listen and talk to them. They would have to hope that Mangini, they would have to hope that, you know, Gruden would come out and talk to them as well. So, no, I don't think that's very wise. It sounds good in theory, but at the end of the day, you can't can your coach unless you got, you know, that backup plan fully on deck and with you ready to roll. And to be honest, they can't really do that right now.
And I think the other thing to consider is Caldwell is homegrown. He's in that system. If you're planning to return with Peyton Manning, then you're using the same system. If you go out and get another coach and you're going to tell that coach, this is your system, this is the system you have to coach, that's not going to work. So it's going to be very difficult for them to change coaches and keep Peyton Manning with what he knows. I mean, the guy's 35 years old. He's not going to learn a new system. He's going to do what has been successful for them. So I think the Colts in particular are pretty much, they really, it would be hard-pressed for them, unless there's someone on their staff that they feel strongly about that they can bring up to replace Caldwell, they're pretty much going to have him for another year or, you know, until they no longer have Peyton Manning as their starting quarterback.
And yeah, even on top of that, the offense coordinator, I'll forget the guy's name. I mean, that's what offense they've been running. Even when they promoted Caldwell, they promoted him from the inside because they didn't need any change to the offense. God, what is the offense coordinator's name down there, man?
I can't think of it. They used to have Tom Moore, but he's actually on I forget what team he's on. He actually left this season to go elsewhere.
Yeah,
I can't think of what
old,
team he went to.
Old guy. He's been there for the longest. But Tom Moore.
Tom Moore.
Is him?
Yeah. He went elsewhere though. This year, but, I mean, they're still running the same offense.
No, it's not him. It's let me see if I can look it up. It's not Tom Moore. Moore is with the Jets now. It's here's his picture. I know what he looks like too. I know what he looked like. I'm trying to
But the thing is,
anyway,
even the thing is, you really if Peyton Manning comes back. He's the offensive coordinator. You really don't need too much help in that area. I mean,
that's
you can
true.
Get a big name, a smart coach, just like John Gruden, and that's a good point. You don't know if you can get any of these guys. They might not even want to come back. But if you can get a nice, sexy name, even Jeff Fisher would be a sexy name. I don't know if he's a better coach than who they got now. But he's a sexy name.
You know, Jeff Fisher is a very good coach. But, again, the only thing that's not good for the Colts is they would have to commit – they would have to dump, Caldwell before even talking to Jeff Fisher. That's kind of a risk, you know.
But are you sure about that? Because these guys are not in the NFL right now.
I was wrong. I was wrong about the tampering. I thought about that. I was wrong about that. But I'm positive. I'm almost positive they can't go outside. And actually, you know what? No, I think I might be wrong about that because I believe the Dolphins were flirting with Jim Harbaugh last year.
You can absolutely because if someone's on another team, but these guys, Gruden, Mangini, these guys are not working.
Yeah, they can actually talk to them. But the thing what's going to happen is it's going to put the coach in either A, if they don't get it, put them like in a lame duck situation. And I guess they could do it, but
listen,
I think they got to go with the system they have now.
Remember Remember what Gruden did with Tampa Bay. Sapp said, listen, we got the defense, and he left them alone. All Gruden did was work with that offense. He wouldn't know how to step in that position if Peyton Manning was coming back. Now, if they get a number one pick and they want to trade him or he's just too injured to play, then
they're not trading him. Peyton Manning would be a cool extra. I can pretty much put anything on that. Right, he's staying. But – again, if they were to go to coach, they would have to get a defensive coach because why, Peyton Manning's offense anyway, that's not going to touch anything. But at the end of the day, Jim Caldwell, it actually came from Tony Dungy's defensive staff. He used to be a coordinator for the defense in that Tampa, too. So I think they'll be fine, and I think they're going to continue to go with Caldwell.
Yeah, continuity is very important, and I think the Colts do a pretty good job of having it. And even in bringing in John Gruden, I mean, he's not going to have the kind of say-so that he wants at head coach because the offense is set. When they promoted Caldwell...
Yeah, they're not going to change the offense for Gruden's style.
Exactly. It was to keep the defense. It was to keep the continuity of the defense because he was behind, he was modeled behind Tony Dungy. So, it wouldn't make sense to go get anybody.
And these big-name coaches, one of the things that we know about all of them is they want control. Fisher, Cower, Gruden, Mangini. These guys want control. They're not going to go into a situation with restrictions. You know, hey, we already have our offense. Don't worry about that. But they're not going to take a job like that. Caldwell coming from inside, sure, absolutely. It's a promotion for him, and it's something he's familiar with. But these big-name guys, I don't see them going to
Indiana. I think it would be a heck of a job. Why wouldn't you want to go there? I mean, you, like I said, you don't really have to do too much with the offense. Peyton Manning, you have to pay, give homage and respect to where it's due. I don't believe you're either smart or you're big-headed. I don't believe in coaching you can be both and still win games. I mean, you got to be smart.
But if you are the head coach, then you are accountable. That is your team, offense, defense, special teams. If you're going into a situation with restrictions, but you've been successful doing it another way your whole career, you got to think your comfort level here. And these guys, their egos are too, and that's not the only job. I mean, these are sought after names that you're talking about. So they're going to get approached. And they're going to, and you see what Cowher's done. He's been approached. They're going to be very selective about the opportunity that they take. Because they know what they want. They know what they're looking for. And they're not looking, as great as it would be to coach a Peyton Manning-led team, he's still not back. So you still don't know what you're going to get next year. Like I said, you're pretty much you're going to be hands-off on that offense. And that's not something these guys would sign up for. I can tell you just based on.
Well, they would have to choose to do that. It can't just be like, this is how it is. They would have to. If you're smart, that's what you would choose to do, just like Gruden did in Tampa. He chose to let the defense be the defense. He didn't need no help. He chose to do that.
It wasn't so much that Gruden chose to let the defense be the defense. They knew what they were doing when they went to go get Gruden as head coach. They wasn't planning on changing their defense. They needed an offense to go with that defense in order to win a championship. So when they got him and when he was coming in, he knew what he was coming in for. He didn't have a hand in the defense.
If he was okay with doing it down there, he would definitely be okay with doing it.
Yeah, the difference is Gruden then, when Gruden took the Tampa job, Gruden was not who he is now. Gruden won a Super Bowl. Now he's a Super Bowl winning coach. It's a different ball game now. Now it's my show. I've won a Super Bowl. I command a certain amount of money and authority.
He can't be that stupid. The first thing people were saying when they won that Super Bowl is, this is Tony Dungy's team. Even he admitted it. This is Tony Dungy's team that won the Super Bowl.
But he was still the head coach. And he had no – at that time – he wasn't the name that he is today. He is more of a name. He is a sought-after coach. When you hear jobs being thrown out there, he is one of the names that people talk about. And as time has gone on, the Tony Dungy impact has been less and less. He's not – we all know, but he still won the Super Bowl. Same thing with Barry Switzer in Dallas. He won a Super Bowl. There are coaches that come in and inherit good teams and win Super Bowls, and they are thought of as – Super Bowl winning coaches. Gruden is a good coach and he's a Super Bowl winning coach. He's not going to go into a situation like that now. He may have done it to get an opportunity. That's what I'm saying. You need an up and coming. You need a Caldwell. You need an up and coming coach, a coordinator on another team that can come in, a defensive coordinator.
And submit to what goes on in.
Absolutely.
I got you.
But
I agree with what you're saying, but I'm just saying. I'm
the organizational Kool-Aid.
Right, but is that going to be better than what you got? Then is that even worth making the change?
Yeah, I mean, Gruden's a great coach, but honestly, it's not really a good fit with him in Indianapolis anyway. Because again, the reason why Tampa brought him in was to install his offense, to get that offense going in Tampa, because that was what was perceived to be the missing link. Indianapolis, that offense isn't going to change now with Peyton Manning on board. That's he's the captain of that ship. So, I mean, there's really no point for him to come in. Again, if anything, it would make more sense of a defensive-minded coach, maybe like a Bill Cowher or someone of that nature. But, honestly, the personnel dictates of what they have to be a Tampa 2-based defense with Freeman and Mathis being the stars of that defense. So I just don't expect any changes there.
All right, Saint, any other questions?
No, good topic, fellas. I'm going to try to keep listening to you. I'm waiting for y'all to talk about Dallas. I'm out.
All right, it'll be coming up.
All right.
All right, quickly, San Diego, Norv Turner, fired or not?
I think you have to. I just think you have to,
K-Star?
It's time. The slow starts. It keeps catching up with them. This year they started out hot and then, completely just dissipated. The thing about the Chargers this year, and through the North Turner era, there's just games where it just seems like they have no energy, no, you know, killer instinct. They completely laid an egg in Detroit. They've been prone to lay eggs in those random times. And, you know, Denver had even lost to Buffalo.
We can move on. I agree. He needs to be fired.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
They're underachieving the whole North Turner era. So, yeah, let's move on.
Really. He needs to be fired. By North. Come to Dallas. We can use a coordinator. Okay.
Yeah, he'd be a great coordinator.
Oh, he was a great coordinator for Dallas back in the 90s.
Incredible coordinator. Yeah, I know. He won a bunch of Super Bowls for Aikman. Yeah, he's a great coordinator.
Yeah. Okay. Last question on coaches, Andy Reid. Do we bring Andy Reid back for another year? The Eagles have made a late resurgence, a little too short, a little too late, but you know they're starting to look. I mean, some would say in the NFC East right now they're the best team in the NFC East. Some would argue. Does their late season play allow Andy Reid to come back one more year, or is his time up, Trent?
I know my boy Saint would disagree because we had this conversation a number of times while he was cutting my hair, but I don't think you fire Andy Reid. Andy Reid has not lost that team, but you do get you a real defense coordinator. You do get you someone that knows how to run a defense and, you know, maybe a few pieces that you need, maybe that linebacker or so, because that front, because, you know, you got pass rushers and you have the secondary. You're missing a few linebackers, but you get you a defense coordinator. You get you someone that knows about defense because these offenses are just potent nowadays. Anybody can almost pass the ball. Everybody's looking to pass, looking to run up the score. So you find somebody that knows something about defense, not somebody who spent their whole entire life coaching the offensive line and then think they can coach defense. No, it doesn't work because when Sunday comes, you know, it's Mike Marsh against Rob Ryan. You know, when it comes to defense, you know, that guy he doesn't know how to adjust his defense. I've seen the defense get creamed all season long. So yes, please keep Reid. He has the team. The guys are playing for him. But please get a defense coordinator.
Okay, sir.
You have to keep Andy Reid. I laughed it off earlier when the Eagle fans were saying, "Oh, you know, let's fire Andy Reid." This time the third. Look, let's be honest. They brought in a whole bunch of talented football players. Yes, we understand that. However, it was going to take some time. There was no OTAs. The lockout, you know, occurred. There was no time for them to gel. They were thrown in the fire immediately. The one, you know, thing that Andy Reid did, you know, make a bad mistake on was, you know, putting Luis Castillo as a defensive corner. That I do agree with. However, no matter the coordinator, it's going to take time regardless. That's a lot of new bodies. You can't just throw – this isn't the NBA basketball. Let's get that out of our heads, people. It's not NBA. You can't just throw superstars together right away and hope it works. Hell, even the Heat and the NBA had to take some time. And this is a much shorter season. But at the end of the day, let's be honest, Michael Vick and his success as a quarterback is tied to Andy Reid as far as his development goes. It's becoming a pocket passer and becoming, honestly, a better quarterback than he's ever been in his whole career. When they signed Vick – that's pretty much a marriage to Andy Reid as well. Because, again, let's be honest, it's going to be hard to – if they get rid of Andy Reid, they're going to have to come up with a whole new offense, a whole new scheme, and, you know, the strength of that team is that offense. So they're not going to do that. He's been there for a long time. He's done his thing. Had a bad year this year. But, again, do you think they'll be like this again next year? No. They're going to be a force next year. They're going to be a Super Bowl favorite next year because, honestly, that team's going to have a lot of time to gel together. And that's a scary lineup. That's a scary roster. So, you know, I think they'll probably definitely be a Super Bowl favorite next year, so we'll see how it goes. But it was too soon to put on those expectations on that team this year.
They were a Super Bowl favorite this year. Okay.
Yeah, but that was ridiculous. That was premature.
What's that?
I know they were Super Bowl favorite this year, but it was kind of a little ridiculous, though, because, again, they had
no one said. No one said that at the beginning of the season, though. No one. We look back on it and say that. But no, at the beginning of the season, people looked at that team and said, oh, my God. No one said.
Yeah.
No OTAs, no that. Everyone was like, wow, that team, you know, look out for them Eagles, okay? I think it's time for him to go. And the reason is when I look at the number of years that you've been coaching and at the end of the day, what have you accomplished, okay? You've got one Super Bowl appearance. You've got five NFC title games. Four losses in those title games. One you won and went to the Super Bowl. Then you lost. You made the decision to put your offensive line coach, who by all accounts was a very good offensive line coach, actually not very good, an excellent offensive line coach, to run your defense, who historically had been run by arguably one of the best defensive minds ever in the NFL, the late Jim Johnson, and you bring this guy in who hadn't coached defense since high school football, I just think you're making, as a head coach, he has made some decisions that are, you don't come back from these decisions. Yeah, the team is looking good the last couple games, and they're fighting for him, and I give the team a lot of credit for that, and I give him credit for having a loyal team. But at the end of the day, when you look at the results, and, you know, Train, you said 3 years, and I agree, and he's been there 12, maybe 13 years, and you look at the record that he's amassed in those 12 and 13 years, when you've had the Cowboys have not really done anything in that time, so they really haven't been a thorn in your side like they were in the early 90s. The Redskins have sucked. They haven't been anything, and the Giants have been up and down. You know what I mean? And so why hasn't that team just totally dominated that division? I think it's time. I really, truly think it's time. I like Andy Reid as a coach. You know, this isn't, you know, there are some coaches that I don't particularly care for. Jim Schwartz from Detroit is one. I don't like the guy. Can't stand him. But I like Andy Reid. I think he's a good coach. I think he would be a good coach somewhere else. I think it's time for him to go and start over, take another team, rebuild, regroup, get a fresh start, and I think that team needs another coach. Now, that said, I don't think he's going to get fired. I think they're going to give him another year. I think the fact that this team has responded the last couple of weeks will probably play well on Sunday. They're going to finish strong. They need, you know.
I love Andy Reid as well. Those players love Andy Reid.
Right.
You see it through and through every game you watch.
Yeah.
Those guys.
And I don't think he's going to get fired. I just, if he got fired, it wouldn't surprise me. But I think they're going to give him one more year. Now, if we're sitting here having this conversation a year from now, he's all done.
No, I think he's got to go. No, I agree. Yeah, we agree on that.
K-Star, you had added a topic about Cam Newton breaking Peyton Manning's single-season passing rookie record, and what does it mean going forward? So since you introduced that topic, I'll let you lead that discussion.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys saw it on Sunday, but again, as everyone knows by now, Cam Newton broke the all-time rookie passing record in NFL history that was, you know, previously set by Peyton Manning, which is one hell of a name to break any record by. All this talk about Tebow and Andrew Luck and, you know, really just a whole host of quarterbacks, there's not been nearly enough attention given to this man, Cam Newton. You know, I said it a few weeks ago that I believe he's the next great, and I mean great, quarterback in this league. I already projected a Hall of Fame future for him, which is a little ridiculous. But the fact of the matter is, you know, he has no ceiling at all. No, honestly, he has accomplished a lot his rookie year. The Panthers have a top-10 scoring offense. He's proven that he can throw the ball. He has 35 total touchdowns with a game to go. He's broken the rookie rushing record the rushing record in touchdowns, not by any rookie, but just in general for a quarterback with 15 on the year. And the man has just been absolute animal, and he's only going to get better. You know, again, this was his first year. He proved he can play against anyone. He's given the Saints a bunch of tough games, the Falcons tough games. They put a lot of points on the board. They're in every single game. And they even put up a lot of points against the Texans, number one ranked defense. They've just been a very good offensive football team this year. Once he cleans up his mistakes, and he will, because, again, the maturity, it's coming. And, again, what does it really mean for Cam Newton's future? What do you guys think? Because, again, we talk about Andrew Luck and everything, what he could be. But we know what Cam Newton's going to be, and he's going to be a great quarterback. This is the best rookie year I've ever seen from a quarterback in NFL history. Ever. Ever. The touchdowns amassed, the yards, the records, this is ridiculous. And the thing was, people weren't so high on him in the draft for various reasons. And, you know, he's just been absolutely superb. The man has no ceiling. The thing, again, that makes him so dangerous is he's so great passing the ball, as you can tell, you know, by the rookie. He's about to have 4,000 yards in the season passing the rookie year. But the thing that with him is he's just such a threat to run the ball. You know, that zone read option, he took that to the house. You know, again, he's a great red zone threat, and it's just I really don't think there's any ceiling for him. The hype for Michael Vick, when he came on the draft, it should be thrown at Cam Newton and solely on him because that's a big boy. And that man hey, he's going to be a great special quarterback. What do you guys think about his projected future and really what this means for the rest of the league and how it could be transcended?
Well, you know, I mean, I have mixed feelings on it. You know, I think you are right when you say that he has not gotten the press that Tim Tebow has gotten. I do agree with that. I think he's gotten much more press than Andy Dalton. But he has not gotten the press that Tim Tebow has gotten, but Tim Tebow's in his second year. You know, I think that one of the things that Cam Newton has, you know, in his young career has not done yet that Andy Dalton is doing and that Tim Tebow is doing. I mean, both of those teams might end up in the playoffs, or one of them might, but they're, you know, going into the last week of the season, both of those teams have a shot to make the playoffs where Carolina does not. And so when you look at his great performance, you have to temper it with the fact that Carolina's 6-9. And so his 4,000 yards isn't turning into wins. Some games, but more times than not, it's not. So it's kind of hard to stop the presses on the guy and say, oh my God, here's the next greatest thing, when it's not turning into wins. That's one thing. The second thing is, to be honest with you, had, you know, at the beginning of the season, did I know Marino's record? Absolutely. Do I know Emmitt Smith's record? Absolutely. Did I know Walter Payton's record? Do I know Jerry Rice's record? There are records that are staples in the NFL, and when they get broken, you say, oh my God, Peyton Manning's rookie record is not one of them. I mean, it's a great accomplishment and congratulations, but it's not something that has me stand up and say, okay, you know, here's the next great thing. I do think, as I'll say with any quarterback and any player in the NFL, you know, I quote Bill Parcells, hold on a minute, put away the anointing oils. Let's give this guy some time. Let's not set him up to an expectation that he can't even reach. Let's give him some time and allow him to be successful. Let's give him another year, and let's see how he does next year. And then maybe this time next year, if he's sitting around, you know, and maybe the Panthers are 9-6 this time next year, and he's throwing for 4,000 yards and doing some great things, okay, then maybe you have an argument to say, wow, look at what this guy is doing. But right now, I think it's a little early. I really do. I think he's had a great year, and I'm impressed with what he's done, but we need to see some consistency and longevity. And we need to see some wins. Train, what do you think?
I agree with both of y'all. My thing about the whole Cam Newton experience is that he proved all the naysayers wrong. He could play the game on the next level, period, hands down. Now, he didn't get a chance to get on when you look at Andy Dalton went to a better team. But he has performed at the quarterback. It made it a lot easier for them to go ahead and trade Carson Palmer and secure some top picks for seasons to come. But Andy Dalton played definitely good enough at the quarterback position to allow Cincinnati to win games.
Let me just say one thing about that, though. But let me just say one thing real quick about that. We've seen this year the impact quarterbacks have. We've seen it in the Colts. We've seen it in the Bears. So I don't give that as much credit as you're giving it. You still got, regardless of the talent of the team, the quarterback still has to perform. We've seen this year particularly what happens when you have questionable margin of quarterbacks, even on good teams. So go ahead.
Even still, my point still stands. Andy Dalton went to a better team overall. Cam did. Everybody knew Carolina had a very weak defense, and they clearly have a very
31st in the league.
And that's probably in almost every category. Points, all that. I mean, they couldn't stop anybody. Now, he does have a bright future, but even still, you know, he's not going to be able to do it alone. Nobody can do it alone. So, I mean, that team per se has to get better in order for Carolina to get some wins, not just Cam Newton. And then on top of all that, you know, he has to find a way to lessen his turnovers. I mean, to go along with his gaudy numbers, he had some turnovers. I mean, some four interception games. Yeah. I think a couple of them this season that was pretty bad. That in some cases cost them the game. Had he not had those turnovers, Carolina probably would have
You're making my point. That's exactly my point. Is there are a few games that he probably, had he not had so many turnovers, they would have won. And now you're looking at a team that's maybe 8-7 right now and got a shot at the playoffs, as opposed to 6-9.
I still don't think it was a playoff team. I said a few games.
You're wrong. In the NFC, 8-7, there are two teams, 8-7. One of them's going to the playoffs. So absolutely, 8-7 right now, you got a shot. And in the AFC, I mean, so no, 8-7.
I don't know that their record would have been 8-7.
Listen real quick. He's had a total turnovers 18 this year for a rookie. Okay, that's fine. You know, that's a little high. 34 touchdowns to 18 interceptions, or 34 touchdowns total to 18 turnovers. That's not the problem. That offense is fifth in scoring. Last year was 32nd. The offense, not the issue. Yes, he's had some high turnover games. That Lions game, he turned the ball over four times. But, again, they also had 35 points on the board. This team, this Cam Newton-led team is going to be probably a playoff team next year. They just need to make that defense a little better. It's 31st in the league. Again, scoring hasn't been an issue. They've been great.
Who's 32nd in the league?
On defense?
Yeah.
Look it up here. I think it's the Patriots. Oh, I see what you're doing. All right.
I rest my case. Funny. Go ahead.
No, the thing is, he's a rookie.
That's why I don't go off NFL ranks for defense, because it's all about yards, and I really hate that. It should be everything consolidated to rank your defense.
I'm answering the question. As a rookie, he's had a great year. But when you start making statements about he's going to be one of the best ever and what does this mean for him, then, okay, now I'm going to rank him as a quarterback next to everybody else.
You're already doing that.
Right, that's right, because now you're asking – you're asking for projections. Well, projections are at 6-9 and the high turnovers, I'd like to see some more wins before I put him, because the other quarterbacks that have poor defenses that are at that level are winning games. For him to be in that same discussion, he's got to win some more games.
Okay, and I agree with that, but let's just remember, they had one win last year. They have six now, probably going to get seven. And as far as the defense goes, the Panthers rank 26th in total points given or in points given up a game with 25.6. The Patriots give a lot of yards, but they're actually 14th in points given up, which is pretty good, right in the middle, slightly above average.
I went to ranking because you went there and said, wait a minute, they're ranked 31st.
I know that. But I just wanted to double check that real quick. So, I mean, I'm just saying. Again, they went for one win last year, having the worst offense in the league, to already the top five offense in the league. And that's pretty impressive. It was only his rookie year. So, again, it's been the first 4,000-yard passing rookie quarterback ever. It's just really – again, he has no ceiling, so I'm very excited for his future, as we all know. So I'll say it again.
I don't think it's fair to say Andy Dalton went to a better team. When we look at teams like the Colts, we look at teams like the Bears, we look at the teams that had solid teams, lost their quarterback, and suffered greatly. And the Bengals, with Carson Palmer sitting home, put in a rookie, unknown, untested rookie, just like Cam Newton was, and he has very much exceeded expectations, to where the Bengals originally were holding on to Carson Palmer on the outside chance that he might return, realized, hey, wait a minute, we got something here, and said, okay, let's go ahead and let him go and get some draft picks for him. So that's what I'm saying is he did go out and win games, and it's not a given because you take a rookie and put him on a team that's got some talent that's going to happen. We saw that in Indianapolis. We've seen that in Chicago. We've seen that with other teams. So that's why, you know, I want to see Cam Newton. I'm not trying to take anything away from his year, but before I jump on the Cam Newton bandwagon, I got to see some wins. And maybe it does involve them stiffening up their defense, but it also involves him playing a little bit more under control, a little less turnovers, and a little better on the decision-making. And I think he will be okay.
And that's what's going to come. That'll come, you know.
Yeah, I think he will be okay. I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I just saying I want to see it. Let's bring Saint back in. I guess he wants to jump in on this one. Saint, we got you.
Yes. Yeah, I got a statement and a question, and I'll find out. One is, see, we got to stop comparing people to Peyton Manning and what's going on there with the Patriots. He's the absolute best. He's been doing it for years. And him and Belichick, they're just wizards up there. We can't compare nobody to them. I don't care how bad their defense is. Them guys have been doing it for years.
Who was I comparing to Peyton Manning, though?
I think he meant Brady. I think he meant Brady and Belichick.
Tom Brady. I'm sorry, Tom Brady. When you brought up Cam Newton, their defense, and then you said who got the last 32 defense.
Well, in the context
it's
of
not
the question,
it's not comparing.
In the context of the question being asked, it was absolutely a comparison because I was asked. Can I finish?
I'm going to tell you, another reason why.
Can I finish?
Go ahead.
I appreciate it. He asked, what do we think this record means for his prognosis moving forward? Now, when you ask me that question, I am now looking at Cam Newton as an NFL quarterback, and I am comparing him to every other quarterback out there. When he made the statement, and I said, I want to see this, I want to see that, and Train had said their defense isn't good, and K-Star said the defense is ranked 31st, okay, let's look at the team that's ranked 32nd. I understand who I'm comparing them to, but that's the basis that the question was asked. So once you
ask that's true. And I already put Cam Newton in the Hall of Fame anyway, so that's another reason.
Put him in the Hall of Fame.
I already did that a couple of weeks ago. He's going in there.
Even putting him in the Hall of Fame, you're talking about the one thing about the Patriots, too, though. It's not like they're playing in the roughest division. Every year I hear about how they have the weakest schedule in the NFL. And you got the best doing it on offense, man. I mean, they're a machine. And they're the absolute best. And they've been like that for years as far as quarterback, offensive line, and coaches. The chemistry they have is just it's on a whole nother level. So even if their defense is last, I can't put that as a measuring stick for other quarterbacks, especially for a rookie quarterback. But even if he ain't a rookie quarterback, we can't compare him to what they're doing over there at the Patriots, man.
The context of the question, it was an absolute appropriate comparison. It wasn't just I just picked it out of the air. He asked the question, and I was answering in the context of his question.
I hate the comparison, but let's move on. Let me ask you this. If Cam Newton and – because I've seen the Panthers play, the defense was absolutely terrible. When the Titans can come and run over you, then your whole organization got problems.
But the Titans, Chris Johnson?
The Titans, period. The Titans, this is just a bad year for us this year. And when we come, we went to Carolina and whooped them. Defense was atrocious. Now, if you switch Cam Newton and put him in Cincinnati, does he still have the same record? Does he do better with that team? Or does he not do better with it? That's the question I want to throw at you.
I mean, you can't answer that question. I don't like what it is. I really don't. Because as much as I would love to argue for it, I'm not going to do that simply because hypothetical. What if ifs don't do anything? Like you just can't use that argument.
What we do know is what Andy Dalton has done in Cincinnati, and no one expected that either. I mean, no one expected what Cam Newton did, and I grant you that he exceeded expectations greatly in Carolina, but so did Andy Dalton. It completely exceeded expectations, and to some degree, he is still not getting the credit that I think he deserves in Cincinnati as a rookie going in and keeping that team competitive in a very competitive, very tough division. And keeping that team on the radar and with a shot for the playoffs. So that's why, you know, if you want to compare rookies and rookies, yeah, Cam's got the better numbers and clearly is the better athlete. But I just, you know, from where I'm sitting, I want to see a few more wins out of him. And yeah, the defense is certainly, you know, at fault, but we also know there's been some mistakes on his part, and I think he'll get better. I really do. I think he'll get better.
I guess my question is because I've seen this here is being compared, especially with my man in Denver, Tim Tebow.
Because you're winning as a quarterback, or is because your team is winning, does the quarterback get all the credit, even if they're not doing much of anything to get those wins?
In the
does
NFL,
that make you a bet? Does that
unfortunately, in the NFL, the head coach and the quarterback get the blame and get the credit. That's just the way it's been, and I don't know that I always agree with that. But
that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear your opinion on. Do you agree that just because you got the W, does that make you a better quarterback than somebody like Cam? Who and I agree with you. I hate that he did blow. He did blow some games. He actually blew some games towards the end of the game. But does that make you a better quarterback because your team has W's at the end?
It's tough to say. With what Tim Tebow did in Denver. The team was 1-4, and that defense was pretty much the same defense, and they were 1-4, and then he went in there and started winning games. And he won games in the fourth quarter by coming back and being productive in the fourth quarter, being horrible for 50 minutes, and then the last 5 to 10 minutes, pulling out victory after victory after victory. It's kind of hard to argue against what he did in that team for that team in Denver. Is that a specific case, or is that the whole case? I don't know, but I think he deserved the credit that he earned for those several games that he won. Now, the last couple of weeks, we're seeing, as I think some of us on this show predicted, once you get enough film on somebody, you can start game planning for him, and now we're seeing him come down to earth. So now he's getting the credit for the losses. Now it's
do you not feel like that Cal Orton is a better quarterback than Tim Tebow?
Train, I'm going to let you take this one because he was your quarterback in Chicago. What do you think?
Do I think Al Orton is a better quarterback?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, so quarterback, right? Of course.
Quarterback.
Is Kyle Orton a winner? In the past, he was, but he also had a great – he also was sitting behind an awesome defense. I still think that was the best defense Lovie had.
He
didn't. You know, he was sitting behind a great defense. But do I think he plays the quarterback position better? Yes. But in this game today, you don't keep your job because your quarterback put up gaudy numbers. You keep your job because your team wins. So at the end of the day, you got to win the game. And needless to say, Denver wasn't winning with Kyle Orton at quarterback. They put in Tim Tebow. And miraculously, they started winning games.
Absolutely.
I explained this. Miraculously, they started winning games. So, at the end of the day, man, it's about wins, you know. But just to answer your question about the quarterback position itself, yeah, Kyle Orton is a better quarterback.
And that's why I had to let him answer, because I've never been a fan of Kyle Orton or Lance Grossman. So, I'll give you a very unbiased. Can't stand either one of them. You know?
All right, please, I'll keep you moving, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Saint. All right, let's move on and do quick fantasy football recap before we get into coverage of the playoff scenarios and the games coming up on Sunday. And I'm gonna let K-Star go first. And K-Star, I knew you were playing for the money. What happened? Did you get the money?
Well, it's a 2-week championship game. It is a little different as far as that goes. The playoffs are 2 weeks per round. I'm actually down 9 in the championship game going into next week. But I feel good about it because I've had a higher scoring team all year, and he has Aaron Rodgers. He's probably going to sit week 17, which is, again, the reason why week 17 football is bad in fantasy land. But, you know, I'm down 9. I'm very confident because I had a lot of horrible things happen to me. I actually had Dan Bailey, the usual reliable, awesome kicker for the Cowboys, give me one freaking point because of Tony Romo's absence. That was awful. That won't happen again, I'll tell you that much. I made the worst fantasy decision I've ever made in my life by assuming Madden was like football in a sense, by putting Travis Beckham, who's very good at Madden, tight end for the Giants because Ballard got hurt, instead of starting a Dixon, and he got me big fat zero. That was very stupid. That won't happen again. Yeah, let's not go on. But, again, looking at his roster, I just don't see how he's going to beat me next week. Again, I'm down 9, so it'll be okay. I got to pretty much score ten more than he does combined to win. But I have the better roster, score more points all year. Aaron Rodgers might sit, which is terrible for him, awesome for me. And Dan Bailey, the tight end position, I'm going to get a lot more production out of. So I think I'll be okay.
Oh, Aaron Rodgers sitting, that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm very ecstatic that Aaron Rodgers is sitting.
But if he's smart, he go ahead and go get the other guy.
Oh, Matt Flynn?
Yeah. Matt Flynn can sling it. I'm not saying he's great or anything. I'm just saying Matt Flynn knows the offense good enough to sling it.
It's a tough decision, though, for him to make. It really is because, on one hand, it's like, it's Aaron Rodgers. And the other, it's like, well, he's probably going to play like a quarter. So it's just, I don't know. I'm happy I don't have that.
And, of course, it is against Detroit's defense. So, yeah. I don't know. Detroit is playing for something a little bit, just for seed positioning right now.
And to be honest with you, I'm in two leagues. Our league, the EFL league, our championship was this weekend. I'll talk about it in a second. And the other league I'm in, the championship is week 17. This is why I don't think week 17 is the week to do the championship. I don't think it's fair. That very reason. I mean, K-Star, you may benefit from it, but it could have very easily been the other way around. That last week.
Yeah.
There are chances of guys are going to be sitting and pulled early, it's a tainted victory, if you ask me. I mean, the guys.
I agree with that. I'm actually worried myself because I'm kind of wondering if the Lions sit Stafford, because again, I have Stafford, I have Arian Foster. They've already had their playoff spot, so I'm kind of a little worried about those two guys in particular between Arian Foster and Matt Stafford, because again, they already got the playoff spots clinched, so they might sit early.
And I was worried because I have Drew Brees. And now the Saints are playing for something, but the Saints play at 1 o'clock, and so do the 49ers. If the Saints had played at 4 o'clock and the 49ers won, Breeze has the record. There's a chance they would have sat Breeze and said, 49ers won. No chance we're going to get the second seed now. We'll sit Breeze and put in, I don't even know who the backup is. So I was worried. Thank God they're playing at the same time. So, I'm pretty sure Breeze is going to play, but to me, that's why you don't do it the 17th.
Yeah, week 17 is not a good look. Okay. It really isn't. A little tainted, I got to agree.
But, I had a very good weekend,
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
Here comes the money.
Before you chime in, can I do the honors, please? It is. I am the commissioner.
Well, I've been waiting since last night. I ain't heard nothing from you, man. I gave up. I'm like,
man,
I ain't got no message. I ain't getting no email.
Let me tell you why. And this is, I feel horrible as a football fan. I did not watch the Monday Night Football game. I completely forgot. After Chicago lost, I was totally in tune with what the Bulls were doing, and they were coming on at 9:30. That's all I kept thinking about, man. The Bulls come on at 9:30. Man, I completely forgot about the Monday Night Football game and the fact that your quarterback needed to have an awesome game for you to win. When I actually saw the score, the final score for you guys' fantasy game, it was a wow. It was a wow. It was probably the most exciting fantasy championship I've seen since I've been playing. So, with that said, our new 2011-2012 EAFL Fantasy Football Champion is none other than our own Commissioner T. Vile Score. Wait till you hear this, K-Star. Vile Score of 105 to 104.
Oh, wow.
You need a 50-plus.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money. Sorry. Couldn't resist.
he needed 50, I can't remember exact. I know it was 50 plus points. Yeah,
51.
Four players remaining.
I needed 51 points.
To win. Or was it to tie? Or was it 52 to win?
52 to win.
Yeah, he needed 52 points to win that game.
Wow.
And he got 52 points to win that game. Lance Moore wasn't even the target. It all was just coaching,
hurt.
I believe. Yeah. So, wow.
So,
congratulations, man.
Well, first of all, thank you, Train. I appreciate that. I thank you. And let me also recognize Nelly Nell, the runner-up for a great season. Great head-to-head battle. I was worried about him, and rightfully so. I mean, the guy had a great team. He had Aaron Rodgers. The damn Bears let me down and gave up 5 touchdowns.
I truly thought,
I said, if Aaron Rodgers gets 3 touchdowns, I've got this on lockdown, because the way things had played out. So I said, if Aaron Rodgers gets 3, I'm good. If he gets more than 3, I'm in trouble. He got 5, and I'm like, oh, my God. So Lance Moore gets 2 catches. Looks like he's about to have one of those games, and then his hamstring lets out on him, and he's out of the game. So he's one of my players. Michael Turner is another one of my players, but the Falcons were behind, so he really didn't get a lot of touches. And so it really came down to Drew Brees and what Drew Brees could do to win this game. I'm down, and I had the New Orleans kicker. So after the last touchdown that they scored, the defensive touchdown that made it 38-16, it appeared that the Saints were folding tent. I'm down by 7 points, and it looked like the Saints were folding tent. They started running the ball. Brees wasn't really throwing it, and I knew I was done. I sat there, and I'm watching the game. I'm down by 7, and I said, I'm done. I mean, they're not even going. They're not even trying to score. I'm done. And the Falcons, when they got the ball, they were throwing, because Turner wasn't going to get me any points, so I knew I was done. And thank God for Dan Marino's record. Thank God that Drew Brees decided that he was going to take that record, because that's what won me the game. He threw the ball and got me a couple of points, and he got the touchdown, and then I got the extra point, and that put me over by a point. And now I'm sitting there thinking, okay, so if the Saints get the ball back and then Drew Brees take – because in our league, tiebreakers are if you've played head-to-head, that's the first tiebreaker. Whoever won the head-to-head series wins. So I played this guy in the regular season, and he beat me. So I couldn't have a tie. I would lose. So I'm thinking, I'm up by a point now, but there's still time left. If the Saints gets the ball back and Brees kneels, am I going to – because now that's a -2 carry. Am I going to lose points? Am I going to lose a point? Because I didn't have the master scoring to even know, but I was worried about that. Like, I can't lose a point here now. You know, if Brees gets sacked or, you know, if he throws it, I'm like, I can't. And thank God Brees didn't come back into the game. and so I ended up winning by 1 point, and I'm very appreciative of the win. Commissioner Train runs a great, great fantasy football league. It was another great year. And I will say that the previous year I was 10th in a league of 14 teams, and the year before that I was 9th. So I've been asked before this year. And in the NBX League, run by my man Bronzel, who's out there probably listening on podcast. What up, B? I will be playing for the championship in that game next weekend. And so I am going for me, an unprecedented double championship. And wish me luck, guys. The guy I'm playing has got a pretty good team, so it should be very interesting. Wow. So anyway. Yeah, so I think I got a caller here. Let's see. 616. 616. Area code.
Jump all the way to the motherfucking press box if you have. All
right. Never mind. 616. I tried to get you 616. All right. Let's take a look at the playoff scenario, and let's look at let's start with the AFC. And so what I see here now, Patriots, they've clinched a first round bye, and if they win against the Bills, they've got first round through the whole, you know, they've number one seed. Does anybody have any reason to believe that they will not beat the Bills? They are at home against the Bills, and I think to me it's a foregone conclusion. I know the Bills look good against Denver, but you know. You guys feel differently, or can we lock in the Patriots as the number one seed right now?
We can clearly lock in the Patriots as the number one seed. Of course they wanted to come through Foxborough.
All right. Now is where it gets interesting. Houston, for the record, is locked into the 3 seed. So No matter what they do, they're locked into the 3 seed. The 2 seed comes down to the Ravens and the Steelers. Okay, so K-Star, I'm sure you're well versed in this scenario. The Ravens pretty much have to beat Cincinnati, and they've got the number 2 seed. And by the way, if the Bills pull an upset and beat the Patriots and the Ravens win, the Ravens become the number 1 seed. Just for argument's sake. But you know, it would be that to me is such a long shot. I mean, anything's possible, but I think that's a long shot. So we have the Ravens. If they win, they're the number 2 seed. The Steelers, and this is K-Star's team, pretty much right now are looking at a 5th seed unless the Ravens lose. Is that correct, K-Star?
Yes, the Ravens play at Cincinnati. If they lose and we win, we're actually the 2nd seed with a chance of the 1st seed, the Patriots, lose as well.
Isn't that amazing that your team could go from a 1, 2, or a 5?
Yeah, 1, 2, or 5.
And if you win, it doesn't matter, because if the other two teams win, then
yeah,
you're 6-5. You know, do you think Cincinnati has a chance? They are at home, and I know you're going to be rooting for them.
I am absolutely going to be a huge Bengals fan. I'll be Hootay Nation Sunday. I can't. I really, though. Like, you know, the thing is, anyway, Cincinnati, if they win, they're in the playoffs. It's that simple for them. It's 16.
Yeah.
So
they just need to win.
They just have to win in their end. So it's going to be a dogfight because, hey, there's all kinds of implications for the division, for the conference, playoffs everywhere. 3 teams from AFC North are looking at a playoff spot, basically, which is pretty ridiculous. But, again, Ravens aren't that good of a road team, but they have a lot to play for. They usually get up for big games this year. So we'll see what happens. But, again, the division rival game, the last time they played, it came down to the last second, and that was in Baltimore. So I'm pretty confident. I feel very good about this matchup. There's a very big hope, very big chance the Steelers, the Steelers can beat the Browns. I don't think that's even noteworthy at all. We all know that. But if the Bengals pull this off, and hey, we're looking at the bye. I'm hoping that happens. I'm really excited for it. Hootay.
Now, I'm going to give you some help here.
Yeah.
When just before game time, you remember Icky Woods? If you do the Icky Shuffle, you're going to give Cincinnati some like good luck, okay? If you don't remember the Icky Shuffle, go to YouTube, look it up, Icky Woods.
Yeah,
okay?
I know the Icky Shuffle.
The Icky Shuffle. You got to have a football in your hand, because without the football, there ain't no Icky Shuffle. Okay? So do the Icky Shuffle.
You got to record it and put it on Facebook for us to believe it.
There you go.
I will Icky Shuffle if the Bengals pull this off and help my Steelers out by doing this. I will absolutely Icky Shuffle. We can get that. We can get the link out. Absolutely. I will Icky Shuffle my ass off.
All right. Yeah, there might be a way. Yeah, I'm going to see if there's a way to put that on the website. Yeah, there's a way. Yeah, okay. So we got it locked in. If the Bengals win, we get an Icky Shuffle from K-Star on video. So we know if Cincinnati wins, they're in. And so that would leave, let me see, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that leaves the AFC West. Denver plays Kansas City, and if they win, they're in. And if Denver loses and Oakland wins, they're in. And Oakland plays San Diego. So
yeah, and if Oakland loses and Denver loses, Denver still is in.
Right. So I gotta say my money's on Denver.
Yeah, they got the best probability. Chance, and they're at home against Kansas City. You figure they win that game, but even if they don't, Oakland could lay an egg in San Diego. It wouldn't surprise me either.
Yeah, and you know, Tennessee can get in. A lot of things have to happen. The Jets can get in. A lot of things have to happen. To be frank, the Jets, they were pathetic against the Giants, and I picked them to beat the Giants. I thought that Rex Ryan would get this team fired up and ready to play, and they looked pathetic. They didn't look good.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I wasn't overly impressed with the Giants either, but
no.
Well, I really wasn't, but the Jets just looked You know, they just
It was like a brutal football game. It was just ugly all the way around.
It really was really ugly. Other than Victor Cruz, who, you know, played the game of his career.
Love Victor Cruz.
Yeah, no, he played the game of his career. But other than that, yeah, it was a really ugly game. So
yeah.
I'm done with the Jets. Tennessee, you know, like, same situation. I think it's going to be either Denver and Oakland for that last playoff spot. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah. I'm hoping Cincinnati gets that sixth seed because that means, hey, it'll be number two seed or possibly number one, but we'll get number two.
So that brings us to the NFC, save the best for last. And I don't see Saint on the line, so if he calls back in, I'm sure he's going to want to chime in and talk about Romo. But, you know, to kind of recap, we have the Packers are already home field throughout, so that's a done deal. If the 49ers win, then they are the number two seed. And if they lose and the Saints win, then they're the number two seed. And they both play 1 o'clock games. So if they both win, then the 49ers get it. And if they lose and the Saints win. Now, the 49ers play the Rams. I just don't see them losing to the Rams. And the Saints play the Panthers, which they are playing in New Orleans, but I think that's going to be a tougher game, than the 49er game. But I do expect the Saints to win, but I think that one of the two games, if any team might lose, I think it'd be the Saints instead of the 49ers. Rams are pathetic. So
with the Rams, I thought they were going to take a step, you know, a step higher this year. I really did, but I think Sam Bradford got injured early, but still, I thought they would be
better. Yeah, he got injured early. Steven Jackson, second play of the game. You know, his first play of the game, he runs for 60 yards, pulls a hamstring. You know, so he's in and out of the lineup all year. I mean, they just, you know, it's just pathetic. And then the fourth seed, you know, we'll talk about this game. It's arguably the game of the week. Dallas goes to New York, and the winner wins the NFC East and is the fourth seed. And the fifth and sixth seed will be between the Lions and the Falcons. And right now, I believe the Falcons have the tiebreaker between the two.
Yeah, they do. Falcons have a tiebreaker, so they're in the fifth seed right now. Lions are sixth seed.
Right. But if they lose.
No. The Falcons lost, didn't they? So the Falcons are sitting at sixth.
No, the Lions could still drop to 60 if the Falcons win. If the Lions lose and the Falcons win, they'll be the 60.
Yeah, then they'll be.
Right. So if the Lions win, they've got the fifth seed.
Absolutely.
And then the Falcons win, the Falcons get the fifth seed. So, and the impact of that
Lions
is.
Lost, though.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, with the Lions have to lose, so that's
right.
That also
right. And the impact of that is that sixth seed will be going more than likely to play New Orleans in New Orleans. So you could have the Falcons going back to play New Orleans for a third time. And, you know, I can tell you from experience, it's tough to beat a team three times in one season, even though the Falcons did not look impressive at all last night. I don't think New Orleans would even blink if they had to play the Falcons again in the first round of the playoffs. And the Lions are looking better. They're looking like a team that could make some noise in the postseason. But the game of the weekend and the last game of the regular season, it was flexed to Sunday night, is Dallas, who just lost to Philly. And it's amazing to me how many times I had to explain to people that Dallas kind of packed it in. Yes, Philly won, congratulations, but you know, let's be honest. This isn't me being a homer. Let's be honest. Dallas really did kind of pack that game in early. They, you know, Romo was ready to come back in and play, and they grabbed him and said, "No, we don't need you." And he never came in to play. They pulled Felix Jones, and many of the starters played part time. you know, you only have so many players, so you can't pull all your starters. So there were starters that had to keep playing. But clearly, when they kept Romo out, they were prepared to lose the game because Stephen McGee is the backup. And so it's amazing how many conversations I had to have with people and said, you do know the game against Philly meant nothing. That said, now Dallas, after losing to Philly and losing to New York, have to go to New York and play the Giants in New York. Train, I'll start with you. Do you give Dallas any chance to go into New York and win this game on Sunday?
How's Tony Romo game?
He's going to play.
Is that 100%? Or is that...
No, it's not 100%. It's not going to be 100%. We don't know what percent it is, but that hand, that swelled really bad. I think there's something wrong with his hand, like pretty bad. That looks, I don't know if you guys saw, but that swelling was just, it looked like a golf ball attached to his hand. Like, it was bad. And that sucks. Like, you know how, T, you were saying that, you know, you wanted to make fun of me about, you know, the Steelers losing the Niners, what we did, but you really couldn't. I kind of felt the same way watching the Eagles-Cowboys game, to be honest with you, because, you know, as soon as Romo went out, you know, the outcome he turn with the Giants, you know, beating the Jets, it kind of, you know, they didn't feel like a real game at that point. So we'll see what happens with the Giants game, but I feel like you should also know that. I wanted to give you crap, but really, what the hell? That wasn't even fun.
With, you know, the bright spot for the Giants, for the Dallas down the stretch has been the play of Tony Romo. And if that hand isn't good, I'm going to lean towards the Giants, because neither team's defense has played lights out at all. It's evident in the last game they played. It was a high-scoring game. I have to favor Dallas I have to favor Giants if Tony Romo is 100%, because he's been the price guy. He's been the dude that's been doing it. No forced turnovers, no errors, just marching the offense downfield. And, man, without him, Dallas, you know, without him being 100%, Dallas would struggle, I think, especially against the Giants at home.
Okay. K-Star, you were jumping in before. Did you want to add?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, you know, for the Cowboys to win this game, simply because, you know, it really does depend on Tony Romo. That running game right now is very inconsistent because, you know, obviously they lost DeMarco Murray and Felix Jones. He's going to play on Sunday, from my understanding. But, you know, at what capacity can he really play? So it's going to be on Tony Romo. And I don't know, honestly, if his hand right now can handle it, because, again, that injury is worse than what they're indicating. It really is. It looks really bad. The swelling was just abnormal for it to just be, you know, a regular sprain. There's something serious there. So it's going to be very tough. It's probably going to be a high-scoring game. I have to go to the Giants again. It's going to be in New York. It's just going to be a very tough matchup. If Tony Romo were healthy, they still have a chance to win the game. Don't get me wrong, but it's so much of it depends on Tony Romo's health and his hand. I don't know if his hand is up to you know, a shootout, so we'll see. But I really hope that he's okay so we can get a really good game and get like a fair shake at who's going to win the NFC East.
Well, let me first clear up. I don't know that you're in a position to say the hand was worse than what everybody's saying. I mean, the hand, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was swollen, but he was coming back in the game until they realized that the Giants won and the game was not needed. And so, okay, let's treat your hand and let's keep you out of the game. I believe that Tony Romo will play and I believe he'll be effective. This every indication at this point, the swelling has. I mean, they said, you know, 2 days as of Monday, the hand looked remarkably better from the way it looked on Saturday. These are NFL professional athletes and trainers, and there's no broken bones, there's no structural damage to the hand. It just got a good whack. So the fact that it happened on Saturday and they're not playing till the following Sunday night is a good thing for Dallas. And, you know, at this point in the season, Romo doesn't need to practice. He knows, you know, he's been playing all season. So they can rest the hand, they can treat it, and I think he'll be ready to play Sunday night. Now I could be wrong when the game starts and he's throwing the ball everywhere except to the right players, and then we'll say, okay, the hand sucks. But at this point, everything that I've read And everything that I've heard is indicate that he'll be fine and that he'll be able to play Sunday night. I am very worried about this game. I wanted to come on here and say, you know, look out, you know, Dallas is going to do this and Dallas is going to do that and Dallas. That's what I wanted to do, but I can't. I'm very worried about this game. I mean, Dallas, you know, there is absolutely nothing favoring Dallas at this point, except maybe the fact that the Giants really haven't played much better. Maybe that's the only saving grace Dallas has right now is you have two teams that have had very similar up-and-down seasons. Defenses have been suspect at times. Offense has given away games at times. And, you know, I think the saving grace is they're looking in the mirror and playing a team that's very similar to who they are. And we've seen that home field advantage in these games don't matter. The Giants have given away games at home, and Dallas can't win a game at home. So it really doesn't matter what field they play on. So now you get down to coaching. And, you know, I love Jason Garrett, but he's in his first full year. He's still got a lot to learn. So I'm very, very worried about this game. I'm going to support my team, and, of course, I'm going to pick them to win. But I'm going to be watching this week, and I need to see that defense. The one thing I got out of the Philly game is the second half, it did look like Dallas's defense finally woke up. It did look like I saw them get at Vic a little bit more. LeSean McCoy didn't even have 50 yards rushing for the entire game. So I saw some signs that the defense woke up against Philly, and we know what Philly can do on offense. But I'm very worried about this game. I don't go into this game with anywhere near the confidence that I went into the first Giant game, where I just knew Dallas is home, they're playing well, the Giants haven't won a game in over a month, we got it. And we had it up until the last 5 minutes and then gave it away. I'm worried about the game. I'm cautiously optimistic. Felix Jones' hamstring isn't right. They just put Montre Holland, who's their starting left guard, on injured reserve. He got hurt in the last game, so he's out. You know, there are areas of concern here with this game. So I'm optimistic that the Cowboys can win, but they've got to play better than what I've seen over the last few weeks. And we've seen time and time again, these are the games that these are the litmus test games right here. You know, I look at this game and I say, you know, I've been the biggest Romo protector and excuse maker out there. And so this is the game now that you've got to show up and take your team to victory. This is the game. This is it now. You know, people talk about choking in big games and all of that. This is a big game. So what do you got, Dallas? What do you got, defense? What do you got, Tony Romo? And Jerry Jones, stay the heck off the sideline, please. Go up into your box and stay there. You are the owner. You are the general manager. And no one is going to take that away from you as the head of the team. But when that ball kicks off, the last place your butt needs to be is on that sideline. I have ignored it for years. I've said he's the owner. He's the general manager. He can go anywhere he wants. But the fact remains, for you to go down during a game to talk to the head coach about Tony Romo, and you don't need to do that. There are plenty of ways to get the message to the head coach that the Giants have won and then let him make the decision. That's what you're paying him $3 million a year for. You think he needs you to go down there and tell him, don't play Tony Romo, the game doesn't mean anything? He was a quarterback in this league, for crying out loud. I was disgusted at that. Jerry Jones, up until kickoff time, do whatever you want. When that ball is kicked off, go find your owner's box, get yourself a Heineken Light, and watch the game. If you want to fire the guy at the end of the season, be my guest. It's your right. But during the game, let the guy do what you're freaking paying him for crying out loud. All right.
Nice rant.
Quick question, and then we'll do our rants before we sign off, because I got another rant. That was a semi-rant. Either one of these teams loses, do you think that coach should lose their job, whether it's Jason Garrett or Tom Coughlin? Train, I'll start with you.
The only coach I think will possibly lose their job for their team is probably Tom Coughlin. He's been in the position longer to make something happen with the Giants, and he got them in the Super Bowl. But, you know, they may look to go into a different direction. Because there seems to be so much turmoil with head coach and players with that team. Like every time I hear something negative with the Giants, it's always between players and the head coach. Oh, they don't listen to him, or he's not coaching them right, or he's not coaching this way, or from the other. So if any team loses their head coach due to a loss, I think it will be the Giants. I don't see Jason Garrett, even if the Giants do. Because, I mean, was this his first full year?
First full season, yes.
Yeah, first full season. So I don't see him going anywhere.
Okay. K-Star?
I don't see either one going anywhere. More likely, again, Tom Coughlin, like Train pointed out. But Jason Garrett's first year, so, again, like, that's just – continuity is pretty big in this league. You can't just fire a guy his first year, especially, you know, right at the doorstep of winning the division, and he still could win the division. Tom Coughlin, again, he's a little bit more – again, very much more likely to be fired because they've had, like, the same – issues the past couple of years where the second half of the season they kind of played very, very inconsistent football. And if they happen to lose this game against Dallas, I think that's a very legit question to ask, especially if Bill Cowher's interested in the job, which he rumored is to be. So, you know, it definitely would be Tom Coughlin instead of Jason Garrett. But honestly, I think they both stay regardless of the outcome on Sunday.
Yeah, Jason Garrett's not going anywhere. And that's, you know, I think the fact that that's even out there is ridiculous. You know, I don't think Tom Coughlin should be fired either. I really don't. I think that, you know, he's won a Super Bowl with this team. I think the team responds to him. And, you know, if they were to lose, you know, there are some things. I mean, they've had a lot of injuries this year as well. And, you know, if they were to lose, I don't think it's time to fire him. I think the Giants have been annually competitive under Coughlin, including that Super Bowl win. So I don't think now, you know, if it's this time next year and we're looking at the same thing again, then maybe, you know, maybe his time is up. But I think he gets a pass the next year. All right, finally, our rants. I'll start this time. It'll be brief, but I gotta say what I gotta say. So, Pro Bowl names have been out there, and as you guys probably know, you know, there could be more added as players get injured and that kind of stuff. And the Cowboys had two Pro Bowl players, DeMarcus Ware and Jay Ratliff. To me, noted by his absence is Tony Romo is not a Pro Bowler this year at this point in time. Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, and Eli Manning. And I got to just say, I do not for the life of me understand how Eli Manning gets in a Pro Bowl over Tony Romo. I don't see it. I, you know, everywhere you look at, with the exception of passing yards, there's no comparison in what these quarterbacks are doing. Romo is having a better year, period. They're both 8-7, granted. And that last game hasn't been played yet. So maybe, you know, there's something to be said for that. Maybe the fact that Manning and his team won over the Cowboys and Manning came back and looked great down the stretch in beating Dallas. And when you're down to looking at both of those two, maybe that's it. Maybe the fact that Manning has a Super Bowl. I don't know what it is, but I got to tell you, you know, I just don't get it. I don't get it. He's completed 60% of his passes. Romo's completed 65%. You know, Romo's a 102.2 rating. Eli Manning is a 90.3 rating. You know, the only guys that have better numbers across the board than Tony Romo are the big three. Thus, my statement last week, the best of the rest. I still stick by that, and I'm surprised. You know, if anything, you know, you've got Matthew Stafford, who possibly you could make an argument for over maybe over Romo, maybe over Eli Manning. Alex Smith, even though his stats are not phenomenal, but look at what the 49ers have done. You know, so I don't get the Eli Manning pick, and there's really nothing against Eli Manning. I'm just looking at the season, and I don't see it. So in my opinion, it would have been Romo, but I would not have objected to an Alex Smith based on what the team has done, or a Matthew Stafford, or even a Matt Ryan, although after what I saw last night, maybe not. All right, so I'm done.
Okay. In that case, I guess I'll go ahead and jump here. But wow, Eli Manning over 21. I guess you could have been a top 22. I mean, the records are the same, but man. Okay. wow. Especially after Tony Romo played through the month. Okay.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the thing. I don't get it. But anyway.
Oh wow. Oh, maybe y'all can injure him and Tony Romo will go. But in any case, I will lead in with the Pro Bowl, but not necessarily rant about it. I am happy to see, even though he won't play, Matt Forte went into the Pro Bowl. Awesome. I'm happy to see Charles Tillman get some recognition and make it to his first Pro Bowl. They don't, Lee doesn't necessarily see him as a shutdown corner, but that dude plays the position very well, and I've looked at his stats in recent years compared to the others, and only thing he lacks is probably the gaudy numbers and interceptions, but he gets at least 5 or 6 per season, along with 80-something tackles, and he leads all corners with 4 fumbles. So I'm glad to finally see him make it to a Pro Bowl. But my rant specifically, it's probably something I should have mentioned last week, and Peter's probably looked for me to mention it last week, but I didn't think about it until after the show was over. The wide receiver that we picked up, Sam Hurd, I clearly do not understand, especially with how it's already tough for black men in America anyway, how you make it. You in the NFL, money is not an issue. You sign a contract for 3 years, $5 million, and you choose to put drugs in the community with your money? You couldn't get recognized for putting up a community center, for making a donation to a local high school, to some local high schools. You had to go out and get drugs to put. And I've lived in Chicago for 3 years. I know where the drugs go when they get sold. So you want to buy drugs, and it would end up in the black community, where people are already struggling. Really, this is what you decide to do with your money. You know, I know Michael Vick went through what he had to go through and sold Plexico Bears, but I hope they do not let this man out of jail ever. Because you destroyed lives with what he was planning to do. Well, I'm glad they caught him, but it really, it's just disheartening to see a person be successful, and then that's what you do with your money. That's what you do to give back to your community. That's all.
I feel compelled to respond real brief because Sam Hurd came from Dallas, was with Dallas for 6 years. And the first thing I do want to say is it's alleged, okay? At this point, it is alleged. And we must respect our judicial system, innocent until proven guilty. So it is alleged at this point. But secondly, everyone in Dallas that knows this guy is completely floored by this. So I wouldn't knock the Bears for signing him because he was clean as a whistle in Dallas. There was never an indication at his time in Dallas that this was even remotely possible, or he just wasn't that type of person. He wasn't that type of player. He was one of the good ones. He wasn't an all-star or anything, but he was a steady Eddie type of player. And it was a complete shock to many guys on the Cowboys and to us fans who followed him for so many years to hear that. It was complete shock. There are players that you may hear something like that and say, yeah, I'm not surprised. he is a complete surprise. So I'm not saying he didn't do it. I don't know. It sounds that the evidence is pretty damning against him. But he does deserve his day in court, and let's just see how that plays out. But certainly, as a Bears fan, I can understand your frustration.
I mean, it's just not even just so much being as a Bears fan, man. It's just, I mean, and, you know, if it's not true, okay. But if it is, it's just the magnitude of what that does, man. I mean, I know exactly where those drugs are going to go.
Right.
I grew up in them streets for 6 years, dude. Trying my best not to be in the wrong place at the wrong time and got out of there as soon as I could. And my family doesn't even live in that neighborhood anymore. So it's just, man. Disgusting, really.
I hear you. K-Star?
I'm just pretty disappointed that Ike Taylor, the cornerback of the Steelers, didn't make it to the Pro Bowl this year when he's really one of the few corners in this league who actually shadows the top receiver and pretty much shuts them down. He hasn't given a 100-yard game. He hasn't given an 80-yard game to any receiver he's gone up against. He's been stellar all year for us. But for the most part, from looking at these two rosters, they did a really good job. They usually do a very good job in the selection process. You see guys like Tamahali in there who deserves to be in there. Von Miller's already in there, which is good. You know, Jonathan Joseph was a very, very good year for him as well. So I can't complain too much. I guess more nitpick. But I don't understand Phillip Rivers making the Pro Bowl. I feel like for the most of this year, he was bad. He cost that team some games. I mean, maybe there just really wasn't that good enough people from the AFC. Brady and Big Ben were kind of givens, and then I guess they just threw Phillip in there to make, I don't know, a reputation, I guess. But for the most part, they did a good job. Mike Wallace, his first Pro Bowl, proud of him. You know, A.J. Green. So they did a pretty good job from what I'd seen. All that Eli, Tony Romo was a little surprising. It's just a little surprising, but for the most part, I feel like they did a good job as far as voting players in.
All right. Well, this is the last show of the regular season. When we return next Tuesday night, we will be focusing in on the playoffs. We will have some final thoughts on the end of the season and kind of wrap up talking about, you know, what do we think is going to happen with different teams. By this time next Tuesday, there could be coaches. I mean, you know, Monday Massacre, the Monday after the end of the season, heads start to roll. So there could be a lot to talk about with teams letting go of coaches. And I think we'll also, as we look at playoffs, I think we'll also look at some players to get some thoughts on where some players might end up next year. T.O. never ended up on a team, so is his career over? Donovan McNabb didn't end up on a team after being released from Washington. Is his career over? You know, the Raiders with Carson Palmer, are they going to make a long-term commitment, or is Jason Campbell going to come back and be the guy? So there's a lot of that we will also look at, maybe not all next week, but over the next few weeks. And also we're going to look at the playoffs, and we're really going to dig in and give you, you know, kind of our thoughts on the playoffs. And, you know, Commissioner T will be calling in either happy about
the Cowboys is who they play.
Oh.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Got it. Delayed. I was trying to get it in there. Or I'll be crying, being like, oh, Dallas is 8-8 going home. Because, you know, here's the thing with Dallas. If they lose, they go to 8-8. If the Philly wins, they go to 8-8. And Dallas drops to third place in the division behind Philly.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, wow. I mean, that you know, that's significant. You know, it's not just you're in second place. You now drop to third if Philly wins. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot on the line here. There's a lot on the line. But hopefully.
So this is the week. This is Tony has to play his game. Is that what you're saying?
I firmly believe it. And I'm hoping that everything I'm hearing about his hand is accurate, that his hand is going to be okay. And that he will start. I really do, too. I mean, I want Tony Romo at his best on Sunday night. And, you know, I want the Cowboys ready to play. And this is, you know, there are defining moments. And I'm quoting Barack Obama, who uses that term. There are defining moments in athletes' careers, in teams' careers. And, you know, this is a defining moment. And I'm not even saying you've got to win. It'd be nice. And I want them to win. But you got to show up. You got to show up. You got to compete and hopefully not make any stupid mistakes that make it easy on the other team to score and get points and win the game. And I'm looking for Dallas to play smart. I'm looking for freaking Rob Ryan to put his money where his mouth is and have that defense play well. And I'm looking for Dallas to compete and hopefully get a win on Sunday night. And we will lead off with that topic Tuesday night on the Madden Voice. So any final words, Train?
I'm kind of interested to see how well Josh McCown play against Minnesota. That's one thing I'll be looking for this week. I know it sounds bad, but you know we're looking for a backup, man. So
rough out there,
man.
It's rough out there, Chicago.
Yeah.
So hey, one quick question, Train. So after losing 5 in a row. If you had it to go back to 7-3 and Brett Favre was interested, you still wouldn't take him?
No, I would not take Brett Favre. No, but I will take Donovan McNabb.
This is what you guys get.
Should have made a play for Brett Favre. Anyway. any final words, K-Star?
Yes. Houdet. Who they think will beat them Bengals? Nobody.
Okay.
Beat these Ravens. Come on, one time. One time, help me out. Help the Steelers out, guys. Who they?
Oh, and wish me luck. I'm playing for another title.
I never thought it was
possible to actually be fantasy football champion in both leagues. And I am one game away from actually accomplishing what I thought would never happen, man. I mean,
that's crazy.
If you need any advice, holler at me. I know you've been doing well all season long, but if you have a toss up between a couple of players, a couple of tight positions, you know, holler.
You know, it's funny you say that because every week I go through the same struggle with trying to determine who to start, who not to start. And this week it really worked out. It really worked out good for me, but I am faced with the same. I have D'Angelo Williams, Peyton Hillis, Felix Jones, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, Darren McFadden, Ben Tate. And fortunately McFadden, well, not fortunately, cause I wish he's an easy start if he's healthy, but McFadden was out. So he didn't start. Ben Tate hadn't done nothing the last few weeks, so I sat him. I wasn't sure if Felix was going to play or not, so I got lucky and I sat him. And Ben Jarvis Green Ellis hasn't done much lately, so I sat him. And I started D'Angelo Williams and Peyton Hillis. And it was perfect starts. The challenge I'm going to have is Lance Moore again. And I have either Lance Moore or I could start Malcolm Floyd. And Malcolm Floyd
has been a nice little roll lately.
Yeah, well,
I like Floyd.
But you know, the problem with Lance Moore is Breeze likes him in the red zone. He likes him in the red zone. He really does.
Yeah, well, you got to play Lance Moore. If not, you got to go Floyd. That's okay.
Right.
But yeah, also, yeah, I'm trying to win my championship this year.
Good luck to you.
I appreciate it. I'm down 9 going into this week. It's for 500, so I'm kind of really hoping that I win. Very excited. Hopefully Matt Stafford or Ian Foster, they don't get pulled or anything crazy. And I basically have pretty much all the Giants going up against Cowboys this week. That was a pretty good matchup last time. They put up a lot of points when they were those two play. Ahmad Bradshaw, Hakeem Nicks, Victor Cruz, and Dan Bailey. I'm sure they'll all be doing quite a bit of work. So I'm very excited. And, let's see what happens. This is week 17. This is the last week of football, fellas, of the regular season. So, I know it's been tough, Train, but, you know, try to enjoy this last week of seeing the Bears for a while, man.
Hey, I look forward to next season, man. So, these playoffs are about to be exciting. There's new teams in there. And if the playoffs are going to be anything like the regular season, we are in for a lot of surprises. Man, are we in for some surprises. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, and, you know, it would be nice. I mean, it would be nice to come on the show next week. And I've won my fantasy football championship. K-Star won his fantasy football championship. good things happened for the Steelers. The Bears found a backup quarterback, and the Cowboys beat them Giants. I mean, it would just be nice to come on and just have some positive energy next Tuesday night. So let's, you know, Jesse Jackson said, keep hope alive. Let's do it.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
And I got to play one more just because you know, it's so important this week.
Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You play to win. And I don't care if you don't have any wins. You go play to win. When you start telling me it doesn't matter, then retire. Get out.
Playoffs? Don't talk about it. Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
We just the Bears are what we thought they were. They're what we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like it's bullshit? Bullshit. We played them in the third game. Everybody played three quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. And that's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
We talking about practice. Not a game. Not a game. We talking about practice. Practice, man. I mean, how silly is that?
All right. So I done went through. All these are classics, man. I had to play them. All right. So for Train, for K-Star, for the callers, Saint, appreciate your support. The other people that called in and listened that didn't necessarily want to be heard, but listen. People in the chat room, people that listen on podcasts. The Madden Voice will be back next Tuesday night, 8 o'clock. We will be here. We will be talking about playoffs. We'll be talking about, we're going to go through all our predictions. And just remember one thing. It's going to be true. It's true every week. It's especially true this Sunday. It's especially true. All feuds on the Madden Voice and in the NFL are settled on the field. Everybody have a good night. We'll see you next Tuesday.